The strength of Durazzo and prudence of Alexius, the progress of famine and approach of winter eluded his ambitious hopes, and the venal confederates were seduced from his standard. A treaty of peace suspended the fears of the Greeks. We've dealt thus lengthily with the First Crusade because it displays completely the quality of all these expeditions. The reality of the struggle between the Latin and the Byzantine system became more and more nakedly apparent. In 1101 came reinforcements in which the fleet of the mercantile republics of Venice and Genoa played a prominent part, and the power of the Kingdom of Jerusalem was extended. The year 1147 saw a second crusade in which both the Emperor Conrad III and King Louis of France participated. It was a much more stately and far less successful and enthusiastic expedition than its predecessor. It had been provoked by the fall of Edessa to the Moslems in 1144. One large division of Germans, instead of going to the Holy Land, attacked and subjugated the still pagan Wends east of the Elbe. This, the Pope agreed, counted as crusading, and so did the capture of Lisbon and the foundation of the Christian Kingdom of Portugal by the Flemish and English contingents. In 1169, a Kurdish adventurer named Saladin became ruler of Egypt, in which country the Shiite heresy had now fallen before a Sunnite revival. This Saladin reunited the efforts of Egypt and Baghdad and preached a jihad, a holy war, a counter-crusade of all the Muslims against the Christians. This jihad excited almost as much feeling in Islam as the First Crusade had done in Christendom. It was now a case of crusader against crusader, and in 1187 Jerusalem was retaken. This provoked the Third Crusade in 1189. This also was a grand affair, planned jointly by the Emperor Frederick I, known better as Frederick Barbarossa, the King of France, and the King of England, who at that time owned many of the fairest French provinces. The papacy played a secondary part in this expedition. It was in one of its phases of enfeeblement, and the crusade was the most courtly, chivalrous, and romantic of all. The religious bitterness was mitigated by the idea of knightly gallantry, which obsessed both Saladin and Richard I from 1189 to 1199 of England, Coeur de Lion, and the lover of romance may very well turn to the romances about this period for its flavour. The crusade saved the principality of Antioch for a time, but failed to retake Jerusalem. The Christians, however, remained in possession of the sea coast of Palestine. By the time of the Third Crusade, the magic and wonder had gone out of these movements altogether. The common people had found them out. Men went, but only kings and nobles straggled back, and that often only after heavy taxation for a ransom. The idea of the Crusades was cheapened by their too frequent and trivial use. Whenever the Pope quarrelled with anyone now, he called for a crusade, until the word ceased to mean anything but an attempt to give flavour to an unpalatable civil war. There was a crusade against the heretics in the south of France, one against John, King of England, one against the Emperor Frederick II. The popes didn't understand the necessity of dignity to the papacy. They'd achieved a moral ascendancy in Christendom. Forthwith they began to fritter it away. They not only cheapened the idea of the Crusades, but they made their tremendous power of excommunication, of putting people outside all the sacraments, hopes, and comforts of religion, ridiculous by using it in mere disputes of policy. Frederick II wasn't only crusaded against, but excommunicated without visible injury. He was excommunicated again in 1239, and this sentence was renewed by Innocent IV in 1245. The bulk of the Fourth Crusade never reached the Holy Land at all. It started from Venice in 1202, captured Zara, encamped at Constantinople in 1203, and finally in 1204 stormed the city. It was frankly a combined attack on the Byzantine Empire. Venice took much of the coasts and islands of the empire, and a Latin, Baldwin of Flanders, was set up as emperor in Constantinople. The Latin and Greek churches were declared to be reunited, and Latin emperors ruled as conquerors in Constantinople from 1204 to 1261. In 1212 occurred a dreadful thing, a children's crusade. An excitement that could no longer affect sane adults was spread among the children in the south of France and in the Rhone Valley. A crowd of many thousands of French boys marched to Marseille. They were then lured on board ship by slave traders who sold them into slavery in Egypt. The Rhineland children tramped into Italy, many perishing by the way, and there dispersed. Pope Innocent III made great capital out of this strange business. "The very children put us to shame," he said, and sought to whip up enthusiasm for a fifth crusade. This crusade aimed at the conquest of Egypt, because Jerusalem was now held by the Egyptian Sultan. Its remnants returned in 1221 after an inglorious evacuation of its one captured Damietta, with the Jerusalem vestiges of the true cross as a sort of consolation concession on the part of the victor. We've already noted the earlier adventures of this venerable relic before the days of Muhammad, when it was carried off by Chosroes II to Ctesiphon and recovered by the Emperor Heraclius. Fragments of the true cross, however, had always been in Rome at the Church of St. Croce in Jerusalem since the days of the Empress Helena, the mother of Constantine the Great, to whom, says the legend, its hiding place had been revealed in a vision during her pilgrimage to the Holy Land. The sixth crusade in 1229 was a crusade bordering upon absurdity. The Emperor Frederick II had promised to go upon a crusade and evaded his vow. He'd made a false start and returned. He was probably bored by the mere idea of a crusade, but the vow had been part of the bargain by which he secured the support of Pope Innocent III in his election as emperor. He busied himself in reorganizing the government of his Cilician kingdom, though he had given the Pope to understand that he would relinquish those possessions if he became emperor. And the Pope was anxious to stop this process of consolidation by sending him to the Holy Land. The Pope didn't want Frederick II or any German emperor at all in Italy, because he himself wished to rule Italy. As Frederick II remained evasive, Gregory IX excommunicated him, proclaimed a crusade against him, and invaded his dominions in Italy in 1228, whereupon the emperor sailed with an army to the Holy Land. There he had a meeting with the Sultan of Egypt. The emperor spoke six languages freely, including Arabic, and it would seem these two gentlemen, both of sceptical opinions, exchanged views of a congenial sort, discussed the Pope in a worldly spirit, debated the Mongolian rush westward, which threatened them both alike, and agreed finally to a commercial convention and the surrender of a part of the kingdom of Jerusalem to Frederick. This indeed was a new sort of crusade, a crusade by private treaty. As this astonishing crusader had been excommunicated, he had to indulge in a purely secular coronation in Jerusalem, taking the crown from the altar with his own hand, in a church from which all the clergy had gone. Probably there was no one to show him the holy places. Indeed, these were presently all put under an interdict by the Patriarch of Jerusalem and locked up. Manifestly, the affair differed altogether in spirit from the red onslaught of the First Crusade. It hadn't even the kindly sociability of the Caliph Omar's visit 600 years before. Frederick II rode out of Jerusalem almost alone, returned from this unromantic success to Italy, put his affairs there in order very rapidly, chased the papal armies out of his possessions, and obliged the Pope to give him absolution from his excommunication in 1230. This sixth crusade was indeed not only the reductio ad absurdum of crusades, but of papal excommunications. Of this, Frederick II We shall tell more in a later section, because he was very typical of certain new forces that were coming into European affairs.